Follow Up North News online anytime. Search Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter for Up North News WI and our homepage, upnorthnewswi.com.
Looks like a national railroad shutdown or strike has been averted, all because some big employers finally figured out their workers deserve time off for sickness or unexpected disruptions. Pretty crazy stuff, huh? The new Marquette poll says, surprise, Wisconsin elections are still close elections. Sarah Godlewski is back in the game on two fronts ahead of the November elections. And Michael Gableman is still speaking publicly about his fake investigation and still being a pompous jerk about it. This is Up North News for Thursday, September 15th. I'm Pat Quaitlow. Luke Mathers is here. Dry today, chances of rain throughout the weekend. And in sports, the Brewers lost 4-1. They had 10 hits, 4 walks, only scored 1 run on a sac fly with 12 runners left on base. Total abandonment, as my wife would say. 7 great innings from Corbin Burns, but when you get no run support, that's what happens. So the Brewers are at home now for 6 games, 3 against the Yankees, then 3 against the Mets. So yesterday I let people know that as the son of a railroad man, I already had a built-in bias toward the railroad workers when I heard that a major labor dispute was threatening to shut down rail traffic from coast to coast. But even with that bias built in, I was not prepared to learn, as I did, that this was not about money. This was not about much of anything in terms of benefits, not even that much about working conditions. It was by and large on the notion of scheduling and not being fired if you get sick and have to go to the doctor, or if a loved one dies and you have to go to their funeral. Railroads, like every sector in the economy, are enduring a labor shortage, but they were long before this. Railroads are not what they used to be. Even when my dad was a brakeman on the Chicago Northwestern line between Eau Claire and St. Paul throughout the 1970s, the schedules were brutal. You were on call frequently, meaning you didn't really have a set schedule. If they needed you, they called you in and you had to come in, unless you had planned time off and planned it, you know, months in advance. And that doesn't really lend itself to, you know, funerals, people dying, or you getting sick. So you'd think the sick days are kind of built into the mix, and they're not. Certainly not enough to attend to the needs of the workers, who, again, were not unhappy with the pay. The pay is not bad working for the railroad, and the retirement benefits and things can be good. But the conditions can be brutal. I saw my dad in a neck brace a couple of different times because of derailments that he'd been involved in. So all you'd really expect then from major employers with huge profits, or at least huge revenues, would be the treatment of humanity that comes with getting sick or having something, you know, come into play. Unfortunately, compounding this was the news coverage of it, which made it sound like it was only going to be a strike by the workers, when in fact it was the railroads themselves that were also threatening a lockout. So there was going to be a stoppage one way or the other, but the frame isn't about whether the workers struck. It's like how the workers were being treated. But again, on CNN, I saw yesterday after the show, the framing was, oh, this is another headache for President Joe Biden. How will he deal with this latest, you know, thing? It's like, no, it's about the workers being treated like human beings. And then their very next story was, how will a railroad strike affect you, the consumer? What does this mean for your Christmas shopping and everything? And again, part of the reason I'm going to be put into a home early is the way that I would shout at my TV from the kitchen yesterday, going, it's not about you and your shopping. Again, it's your neighbor who lives down the street, works for the railroad, and you always say, hey, where's Bill? Where's Bill? Bill can't plan to be at your picnic or whatever, because Bill's always on call. He could at any point get a call at 10 p.m. and say, be in the rail yard at 2 a.m. or whatever the case may be. That's how the business works. So it's not just about the consumer. I get that everything seems to be about the consumer and about the market and will this affect inflation? But before we get to all of that, can we come back to the root causes of these things first? Before it's a headache for Biden, before it's a headache for you, is it a headache for somebody else? Is there somebody aggrieved here? And that is not to say that workers and unions don't strike for reasons that would be poorly received by the public. I'm sure it happens. I'm sure I've looked at stoppages in the past and went, I don't know, that sounds like a fair offer to me. But when you read from railroad workers about what they have to endure in their scheduling, I'm just naturally going to gravitate that way because it's not just the railroads. And I can hear some people right now saying, hey, me too. That happens a lot nowadays in an era of just-in-time inventory and lean budgets that people don't have the predictable schedules they used to because they're brought on and let go based on how traffic comes into their restaurant or their store or whatever. And while that's fine for the company, it's hell on the workers who want to make a decent wage, but also want to be able to know if they can pick their kid up after school all the days of next week or if they have to arrange something. So I'm glad it's been averted. I just hope that we keep the focus on how the workers are being treated instead. We'll have more about the Inflation Reduction Act and a celebration about it after this. You're up north. This is not familiar to me. Oh, there it is. Okay. See, when you might not believe this, but back in the day, young Luke, when TV shows, you know, kind of hit the big time, their theme songs would be played on the radio. And that was like the little intro there you didn't hear as part of the TV show before the horns came up. The Rockford Files in the last segment, that was a radio hit. The theme from SWAT. Miami Vice. I don't even know. When was the last time a TV? Well, you know why? There's no TV themes anymore. They have to get right into the show. It's very rare that you see, unless it's like Game of Thrones, where it's like a 3-minute, you know, opening sequence. You're thinking about this now. Think of a network TV show, not cable, because they can do whatever they want. But
Parks and Rec was
and Law and Order doesn't count because we're going back 30 years now on Law and Order.
But yeah.
Do recent shows many of them have much when, for themes, any theme songs?
When Kelly Westlin was on, we did the Parks and Rec theme song because that's what she requested, and so that's a good one. I like that one. That's yep. still that's been over for close to a decade already, which makes me feel old thinking about that.
Yeah, exactly. In our last hour, we were talking about the 50th anniversary of MASH, and I was mentioning some of the other shows that aired during that time. So we thought we'd have some fun. Reminiscing with some of the old TV themes. So that's what brought up the Waltons, which I did not recognize from the radio edit, shall we say, of the theme. But anyway, I digress. There was a big party on the White House lawn on Tuesday. No, it was not a national political convention like Trump held in 2020, because you're not supposed to do that kind of thing. This was a celebration of a bill passing and being signed. Now, the Inflation Reduction Act was signed 4 weeks ago, so it's already law, it's already taken effect, but because of, you know, summer schedules and everything else, the White House didn't actually have a reception to thank a lot of the people who pushed for the law to get it done. If you haven't been following this, obviously the Inflation Reduction Act is about more than that. It's basically the Biden administration's final comprehensive legislative package. Part of it was designed to attack inflation by doing things like lowering healthcare costs and putting, making the tax code a little bit more fair so that billionaires and corporations couldn't get away with paying zero taxes. But it was also a climate package. Some of the most ambitious climate initiatives that have been done yet. And in some ways they're very physical in going after the climate, whether it's remediation, whether it's, encouraging agricultural practices that help protect the environment. But there's also proactive consumer things, like if you want your next car to not run on fossil fuels, if you'd like it to be an electric car, if you'd like to retrofit your home with solar panels or whatnot, you'll get more help than ever to do that. And as a result, you and I will contribute a little bit less to a warming planet and a climate that is in crisis right now and causing no small share of problems. So I think it was a lot of the climate advocates that were among those at the White House on Tuesday celebrating. And Carrie Schumann was one of them. Carrie is the executive director of Wisconsin Conservation Voters, formerly known as the League of Conservation Voters. And I found out that she was going to be one of those at the White House. And in fact, there's a photo of her along with Senator Tammy Baldwin, State Representative Lisa Subek, and others. I think the mayor of Sheboygan was there. Yes, Ryan Sorensen. And so they were all there helping celebrate its passage. And I had a chance to interview Carrie by Zoom yesterday about it before she left Washington, D.C. And I was just assuming it was going to be one of those typical reporter interviews where we might lift a soundbite. Maybe we would lift two soundbites. And I told her on the front end that I wasn't going to run the whole thing as a clean interview segment. But then she went and did such a good job answering all the questions. And there was none of that, interruptions where we end up talking about the weather or anything, that I told her afterwards that I changed my mind. I am going to play like a full snippet of our conversation. I think it's about 6 minutes long and helps really explain from Carrie's standpoint, from Wisconsin Conservation Voters, the importance of these climate elements of the Inflation Reduction Act and how people's bipartisan response to climate initiatives shows that there are many Republican politicians who are falling out of the mainstream. We've talked about that in our earlier hours when it comes to abortion rights, but the same can be said for climate. So we'll hear that and more. I believe I started with Carrie asking her about whether she knew when the bill was about to be passed, if there would eventually be this White House celebration. Had she always known about it, or had it just come up? And she said that the note about the invitation of the White House had come up fairly recently, and then we pick up the conversation from there.
It is such an important piece. It's a historic piece of climate action. It's the biggest investment in climate action in U.S. history. So the fact that there was a celebration was great. We should celebrate these moments because it's a really, really big deal.
You were there with Senator Tammy Baldwin and some other folks from the state. What was the discussion like with her and others about what, the significance of this for Wisconsin?
Sure. There were a number of people from Wisconsin there, Brian Sorensen, who's the mayor of Sheboygan, Lisa Subek, who's the state representative, Greta Neubauer, state representative, Andrew Werthmann, who's on the Eau Claire City Council. So there were quite a number of us there from Wisconsin. And I think the thing that is really striking is that this investment allows us, we're in a time when the Wisconsin legislature is not investing in climate action. They don't seem to really care that taking action on climate is popular across political boundaries, and they're just not taking action. But this Inflation Reduction Act really allows us to make the kind of investments we need to make in Wisconsin, for the state government to make investments, local governments to make investments without the legislature. we can make progress and don't need the legislature to approve it.
When looking at surveys of this, it's very clear that there is a bipartisan support for it. Even Republicans who maybe don't think, a changing climate is a monster issue for them, they still see value in this bill for Wisconsin. What is it? I'm asking you to speak for them. What do you think they see in it, even if you're not, paying a lot of attention to the climate itself?
Yeah. So, one thing to note is we actually just finished some research, which we haven't made public yet, but only 13% of Wisconsinites, so that's across all the political spectrum, only 13% of Wisconsinites aren't concerned about climate. That means everybody else has some concern about climate change and that we need to take action. So there's that piece of it. I think another really important, a really important piece of it is that when you make these kinds of investments, these are economic investments. These are investments in manufacturing. These are investments in workforce development. These are investments in rural communities. They're investments in urban communities. There is so much economic investment here that even if you're not worried about climate change, it's hard to ignore the importance of the economic investment and what it will mean for the state.
And yet it did not get bipartisan support. Senator Ron Johnson voted against it. Congressman Tom Tiffany, frequently, mocks the whole notion of a changing climate. So now that you've reached this milestone, what is it that you can tell voters when they say, well, I heard from Congressman Tiffany or Ron Johnson or somebody else, X, Y, and Z?
Yeah, so I think we're in this place in time where the public is at is very different than where some of our elected leaders are at. The public's ahead of a lot of our Republican elected leaders who are still, Ron Johnson is still saying there is no climate change. And yet everybody knows climate change is happening. It's having a serious impact here in Wisconsin. I mean, we are seeing our Lake Michigan erode properties. People are losing their property values. We are seeing impacts on our water quality from climate change. We are seeing impacts on our agriculture. We have more mosquitoes and ticks that carry more diseases, which we all find frustrating. So I think voters need to remember that people like Senator Ron Johnson are just, or Representative Tom Tiffany they're out of touch. They're not in the same place that voters are at, and they're not representing us.
Now, conversely, I know I already mentioned Tammy Baldwin, but Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes led the governor's climate change task force. And so I'm sure you have had discussions with him and can talk a bit about, where his priorities are at if he should, win election to the Senate.
Absolutely. Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes has been a champion on climate for a very long time. When he first, got involved, ran for office in the legislature years ago, it was one of his top priorities then. It continues to be one of his top priorities. He doesn't shrink away from it. He knows that this is key to our future. It's what we need to do for our children's future, for our grandchildren's future. And he's leaned into it. To him, it is an absolute one of his top priorities.
That's wonderful. Did we miss anything about the bill or the celebration that you wanted to make sure to mention?
Well, I guess the only other thing I would say is that when you, when the bill came out, I looked at how at the governor's clean energy plan that he came out with a while back. And what is notable to me is how much the two work together really well. These big investments that will come down from the federal government in the forms of tax credits and grants, both to consumers and to governments, are in the exact same places and the exact same kind of categories of action that the governor is pushing for in his clean energy plan. So I think there is a synergy here that is just going to allow the governor and mayors and city councils and county boards to just lean into clean energy and reducing pollution and making sure that our communities are healthier and safer for future generations.
There was that poll from Democracy for Progress that showed by an overwhelming majority of Wisconsinites said, they would want Governor Evers to go get federal funds if they are available for this. That ability of a chief executive to take advantage of this bill could really come in handy in what might otherwise be a hostile state budget legislative session early next year.
That's exactly right. I think that is the biggest value of this to Wisconsin. The Wisconsin legislature has signaled that they're not going to make these investments, but we can move ahead without them. We can move ahead with investments from the federal government.
And that's probably the most telling thing coming out of that interview that I did yesterday with Carrie Schumann from Wisconsin Conservation Voters, is that once again, a lot of the spending will be done with leadership from the executive branch, when the legislative branch either can't or won't serve the public. And I say again, because that's exactly what we're seeing with the American Rescue Plan, where governors were given wide liberty to disperse pandemic relief funds as they see fit. And while Republicans have been, you know, caterwauling about Tony Evers and other governors doing this, they're at home. They're doing nothing. And so if that's the way that the legislative branch of government is going to operate, then it seems this is the way to do it, where you allocate the funding and then let leadership be shown by leaders. We'll have more coming up after this break. You're up north. You're going to make a Mount Rushmore of 70s TV themes. I would put this one in the George Washington spot. The theme from SWAT. I'd say best TV theme or greatest TV theme from the 1970s. You be the judge. But if you say no, you'd be wrong. This is Up North News. It's a Thursday morning. A couple of observations on recent developments. This from Oliver Willis. So Joe Biden got union demands on the railroad. He got auto workers building new EV plants. He got construction workers building new microchip fab plants and infrastructure from coast to coast. But go on. Tell me more about how Donald Trump turned the Republican Party into the Workers' Party. Very well said. And then from Nick Fleischer. Failed, quote unquote, leaders like Tony Evers and Joe Biden have both stepped in to help resolve labor disputes and avert major strikes in the past few days. Do I have that right? Yes, you do. Tony Evers with nurses at UW Health, Joe Biden just now with the railroads, again, showing leadership in helping resolve these things. Whereas Republicans in Congress were all set to step in and take the side of the railroads and try to get Congress to impose a settlement. And, again, thankfully, we got leadership on behalf of the workers from President Biden. Tomorrow, travel writer Susan Lampert-Smith will join us, along with former editor of the Chicago Tribune and Sun-Times, Mark Jacob, along with Up North News associate editor Christina Laurie. At one point, I had the notes in front of me for what's next on Asgo's Wisconsin. But if you get Asgo's Wisconsin, where you listen to this fine program, Kristen Brier will be there, and she'll have some cool guests. There. That's it. That's all I got for you.
And that's all you need to say?
That's really all you need. Kristen has cool guests. Why wouldn't you listen? Now, if you're up, up here in the Wausau area and you're listening to Chad Holmes, he too has cool guests during the day. I don't get that list in front of me at 10:35 in the morning, or I would share. So make me a note that we're going to start calling these people maybe on air, in the early during the 8 a.m. hour and say, hey, what's going on?
Well, or just have them submit to you the information so that we can share it. That is something that we will be working on.
Well, yes, and that's easy for me to say. Especially when you consider that, if they were to ask the same of me, it's a lot like you when you say during a commercial break, what are we talking about next? And I say, whatever I can find.
Here we go. Chad Holmes, 25 minutes ago, posted today that on his show, he will be joined by the 7th District congressional candidate, Dick Ausmann.
Dick Ausmann. Okay. Yep.
So Dick is going to be joining Chad on his show at 2:15 this afternoon on Bull Falls Radio. And he will also be speaking at 3:15 to Nick Oakwig of the Wausau CVB and Sports Authority. So
the Convention and Visitors Bureau. Okay. That's some good stuff. So in other words, I don't have to call them in the morning. I'm just going to turn to you about this time every day and say, hey, what do you see out there? So
there we
while
go.
You look up, while you look up Asgo's Wisconsin's fine guest list, I'm going to tell people that speaking of recent developments in the news, and this from WKOW in Madison, I'm not reading it word for word, so these are my words, not theirs. But a right-wing legal group has decided to challenge whether a federal voter registration form can be legally used in Wisconsin. And you can bet, said Pat, that if it involves the Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty, or WIL, It will involve ways to try to keep people from voting, at least certain people from voting, because that's what they do. Phil filed a lawsuit against the Wisconsin Elections Commission in, come on, everybody, you know where, Waukesha County. Yep, the suit claims that the Wisconsin Elections Commission is breaking state law by telling clerks they can accept a national voter registration form when voters are seeking to register. States generally have to accept the federal registration form, but Will's lawsuit claims Wisconsin is exempt from the requirement because it allows same-day voter registration. Will claims the federal form conflicts with state law regarding information that is or is not requested. The conservative group argues that because the federal form does not ask whether a prospective voter has previously been convicted of a felony, it conflicts with state law, which requires Wisconsin voter registration forms to ask about past felony convictions. And there we get to the heart of why Will has filed this lawsuit. It is, again, the continuing effort to either intimidate people into not voting because they may have a past felony conviction for which they've done their time and are productive members of society again, or they were convicted of misdemeanors some time back, but may be unclear as to whether the law applies to them and they don't want to vote illegally, so they just don't vote at all, or the information that gets out simply intimidates more people into not voting, not wanting to be asked any questions about past convictions and things like that. It's not necessary to actually ask about past felony convictions on a voter registration form. If a voter is not eligible, or if a person is not eligible to vote, that's likely going to come up in the registration process. It's not like databases don't talk back to each other. And that if a felon, as they are still serving probation or on parole, they're made very aware of the rules, including the rules of when you can vote and when you can't vote. This is a sliver of the electorate, certainly not enough to influence an election one way or another. You know, Tim Michaels isn't going to lose the governor's race because so many felons who have served their time, voted, or felons who aren't yet eligible to vote have voted. That's not the point. The point by Will and conservatives and Republicans is to continue to be the only political class among developed nations on the planet to try to discourage fellow citizens from voting, especially citizens who come from certain populations that they know they don't have major support. And the reason they don't have major support from certain segments of the population is because of their policies, which do things like this: target certain communities of color and such, and try to get them to not vote. It's the same as the way they love to complain about crime in Milwaukee. And you see this in all the ads for Tim Michaels or for Ron Johnson, either by the candidates or by their allies, which show you scary Milwaukee and show you, the other people of color who are supporters of Mandela Barnes. But back to Milwaukee. Again, if the Republicans were so concerned about crime in Milwaukee, they would propose ideas. They would run candidates. They don't propose ideas. They propose penalties for cities like Milwaukee. They don't actually try to propose ideas that they think would address it and then try to win over voter support. That's not how their game works. Their game is to simply criticize and frighten about big, bad Milwaukee and about big, bad crime. And that was brought home to us in the new Marquette poll that came out yesterday when, again, they were asked, all the voters were asked, what are your top issues? Or I think the question went, I'm going to read you a whole bunch of issues. Tell me your level of concern. You're not concerned. You're somewhat concerned. You're very concerned. And this is just people who said they were very concerned about a certain issue. And when it came to crime, it was 47% of Democrats. It was 61% of independents. But it was 71% of Republicans who said that crime was a major issue to them. So that overall, the number was 61%. But then the poll went on to ask, do you feel safe going about your daily activities? And overall, the answer was 76%. For Democrats, it was 76%. For independents, it was 75%. And for Republicans, it was 78%, because they're living there in Waukesha County, Price County, Marathon County, wherever, and they're feeling pretty safe, as well they should. But because they have been trained to believe that Milwaukee is a hellscape and that people could therefore somehow, you know, spread to their community in Clark County, that crime is a concern for them. If it is a concern, the next logical question is, well, then what do you want to do about it? Do you want to address the root causes of crime, the poverty, the lack of job availability, the way public schools have been drained of funds so that kids in Milwaukee and other cities don't get the education they need? Do you want to address the student loan debt crisis that is keeping people from getting the higher education they might want? Are you going to do any of those things? Or are you just here to scare people and complain? And if that's your game, that's fine. But, you know, please don't be offended when I and others call you out on that, because that's what this is. People want to know, wherever they are, whether they're in Wausau, La Crosse, or Ashland, they want to know what you're going to do for them. Yeah, you can tell me to be scared of this place or whatnot, but what are you going to do for me? And that's where we find out if there are, in fact, proposals to do things, or if there's just scare tactics and rhetoric. Let me say this about Milwaukee, because I lived there for 4 years. Both of our daughters were born in Milwaukee back in the day. And it's a wonderful place. And it's only gotten better since I left there like 30 years ago. The redevelopment of the Walker's Point area, for example, is nothing short of magnificent. But that is not to say that, like any big city, it does not have its problems and its problem areas. I drove through them every day. I was the traffic director for a billboard company for a time. So I had to know where every billboard was in the city so that I could drive clients around to show them their billboards. And you know where most of the billboards were located because of zoning restrictions or the way that things had developed. And so I knew the city well, but I also knew that you were just as likely to come upon somebody who was working their hardest to make their part of 35th or Capitol Drive or whatnot look better and to be a welcoming presence than to see some activity that might make you a little uneasy simply because, you know, you're not from there. It's a city that would be doing so much more if this legislature weren't so hell-bent on using them as some kind of a, you know, as an example, as a scare tactic, by starving them of the funds that they need, the funds that they generate. This city of Milwaukee is the largest cog in the state's economic engine, and yet is sneered at and treated with disdain, when if it didn't generate what it did, the quality of life in all the rest of Wisconsin would suffer. And while I am a proud resident of Chippewa County, and I have worked up north for a big chunk of my life, and I love it up here, take it from somebody who has lived and worked down there too. The trash talking of Milwaukee, if you're buying into it, but you haven't actually been physically exposed to the city, you're being played. You're being played for somebody else's political games. When you really want to instead be looking for What do we as Wisconsinites want and need in every part of the state? And look, I get that there's always going to be a little tension between the cities and the rural areas of any given state. I knew that growing up in the Twin Cities, and you know, versus the rest of Minnesota. But in no other state do you have such fiscal punishment and such misdirected, to put it politely, disdain coming in our political communication. And we should expect better of Republican candidates for office. We'll wrap up today's show right after this break. You're up north.
Again, here's Pat Kreitlow.
Now, if we're going to do 70s themes that everybody knows the words to, I mean, you got to start here. Mostly because the theme from SWAT doesn't have any words to it. But, and then I'd put on the second on that list would be WKRP in Cincinnati. Now, it's just, you know, if you ask any child of the 70s, they will rattle those right off. Luke has today's guest for As Goes Wisconsin, heard next on some of this fine network of station.
Yeah, coming up on Bull Falls Radio here where you're listening in Wausau, on locally grown radio in Wisconsin Rapids, and on the Shaw in Waukesha. As Goes Wisconsin today, Kristen Bry will be joined by Danielle Nabok, I believe is how the last name is pronounced, talking about food insecurity here in Wisconsin. Dr. Mike will fix your life and your lineup. So since Thursday night football is this evening, that means week two of the fantasy is kicking off, and Kristen's going to be joined by Dr. Mike for life advice and lineup advice when it comes to fantasy football. And then Joe Flick of Ignite the Spirits Fire Truck Pole, I believe in the Milwaukee area, is going to also join Kristen, and she's going to have somebody on from 350 Wisconsin Action too. So full show for As Goes Wisconsin, airing across civic media stations from 11 to 2 today.
The civic media dynasty. Then tomorrow for Dad Shirt Friday, and I have a brand new one for that tomorrow. Wait till you see this one. but we too have a full show. Susan Lampert-Smith, our travel writer, will tell us about a couple of stories. I'm actually thinking I'll get put up on upnorthnewswi.com later today. And then that's in our 8 o'clock hour, 9 o'clock, as usual, Mark Jacob, former editor of the Chicago Tribune, talks about media coverage. Carolyn Fiddler from Courier Newsroom and Christina Laurier from Up North News. So we have a very full show ourselves on Dad Shirt Friday. I just seen a new statistic from Tom Bonier. He is the CEO of Target Smart, which is a Democratic-leaning research firm. And it's where we're getting a lot of the figures on the gender gap in new voter registration since the Dobbs decision. I have mentioned previously, because of Tom Bonier's work, that Wisconsin had the third greatest gender gap. That many more women than men are signing up to vote for the first time. Maybe not the first time, but if they let their registration lapse, then they're re-registering. And he just posted earlier this morning about Wisconsin. He says, more than 300,000 Wisconsin voters have requested a mail ballot for the November general election. 59% of those requests were from women. By comparison, in 2020, 53% of the mail-in ballots were cast by women. So again, since I don't have more data points than that, I don't know if that's a huge increase or a moderate increase or any whatsoever. But it's an interesting data point to note that, you know, 53% of mailed-in ballots came from women 2 years ago. When you look at the population breakdown, that's probably, you know, on par, 53. We know the population of women in Wisconsin is not 59% women, so there is most definitely an increase. And again, some of those women are Republican women who are women who favor the repeal of Roe v. Wade. But I think it's pretty fair to say not a lot of them are. I think the vast majority are women who, I mean, that we have been hearing from that have said, you know, that's enough. it's enough of this, that this war on our bodily autonomy has simply gone too far. It's what's motivating State Treasurer Sarah Godlewski. If you missed it in our second hour today, we talked to the state treasurer and found out that while she competed in the U.S. Senate primary and came up short, and Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes is the one who's running against Ron Johnson now, she has not ended her efforts to have Ron Johnson unseated. In fact, she is starting not one, but two political action committees, one at the federal level for the race against Ron Johnson, and one at the state level designed to help six different women who are running for legislature in order to protect the veto of Governor Tony Evers. And so we ran through the six women that she's working on through Women Save the Veto PAC. And then in the other one called War, Women Against Ron Johnson. She talked about how that work has to go on, again, motivated primarily by the repeal of women's abortion rights in Roe v. Wade. And if you want more information about what Sarah Godlewski is setting up in those two PACs, you would want to go to womenwinwi.com. Again, womenwinwi.com. The Brewers were losers against St. Louis. They split the series. Again, not the end of the world, but
it's not really the split of a series, though, isn't it? Because this is there's another two games now. The Cardinals.
I just meant this. These two games in St. Louis.
Right. It was supposed to be. I don't know how exactly the schedule changes were from the fact that the ownership locked out MLB players to start off the season.
Right. Yeah.
Cut the season 2 weeks late. And now we're forcing the players into making up those games so that revenue can still be made on them and all of that fun stuff. But yeah, at least they got one, I guess. But I don't know. Where are we at in the wild card? Are we more than two games back now? Were there?
We had a chance to be, what, one game back? And now we're not. So we're either a game and a half or two games back, I guess. So still time, but it does, you know, it begs the question, how do we have to do against the Yankees and Mets in these next six games?
Yeah, it's hard. But then we also get the Diamondbacks again, but we didn't fare well against them.
I was going to say, we can't anticipate any of these things,
and
because
the Reds again.
I haven't seen the chart. I've got to look up the chart to see of all the cellar dwellers, you know, the Pirates and the Reds, the Rockies, the Diamondbacks, the Cubs, all of those teams. There's going to be a stat. They got most of their victories against X. And I'm just wondering how many of them will be able to say they got most of their victories, you know, against the Milwaukee Brewers. Not so much in the West because they don't play as many games, but I've got to think when we look at those final division stats between the Cubs, the Reds, and the Pirates, if they haven't beaten each other more than Milwaukee, or if they've beaten Milwaukee more than they've beaten each other, and that sadly could be the real tell of the season.
Yeah, Milwaukee is two games back from the wild card. They're 6-4 over the last 10 games. The nice thing is San Diego is 4-6 over the last 10 games. So we got to take advantage of that so that we can catch up to San Diego. They're not doing so hot right now either. So we need to win against the Yankees and the Mets. That's what we got to do.
Yeah, and I don't know as Josh Hader has he collected himself yet, or is he still?
I mean, if their record over the last 10 games is any indicator, I don't think so. 4-6 would mean that the closers maybe not doing their job, but I don't know. I don't know what the narrative is in San Diego right now.
All I know is that our most recent thing is bringing the bats back to life, especially with runners in scoring position. That is not going to be something easy to do against the Yankees and Mets, but hopefully they do get that chance. Thank you so much for being part of our morning, making us part of your morning. We'll do it again come Friday. Have a great day. It's an open smile.